Intelligent Medicine is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and healthy eaters get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/Hoffman to support the show and see if you qualify. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And first of all, a very happy new year to you. We're getting started on 2018. And well, for many of us, you know, the holidays have been a time of relative excess. That's what the holidays are all about. They're about family and fun and, you know, maybe a little indulgence with food. Yeah, I had a couple of things that, you know, I don't usually have over the holidays, and that's all to the good. And now January is sometimes a time of reckoning, a time of resolution, a time of rectitude. Hey, those all start with R, so they're alliterative. And I can't think of a person I'd rather talk to at this time of year than today's guest. She is a veteran in this field. We've been professional colleagues for, well, I don't even want to say how long. She's Anne-Louise Gettleman. And is laughing in the background. Anne-Louise is a New York Times bestselling author of more than 30 books on diet, detox, the environment, and women's health. And her latest book is entitled Before the Change. We talked to her about that earlier last year, but she's come out with a new revised edition. She's always, you know, she's scholarly. She's always trying to update and bring us the latest developments in the field of natural and integrative medicine. And so the new book features a lot of new material, which I want to cover on today's program. Before the Change, Taking Charge of Your Perimenopause. Yeah, that's an important concept. But I also want to talk about detoxification and ways of kind of starting the year right. So without further ado, here's Anne-Louise. It's a pleasure having you back on, Anne-Louise. It's nice. First of all, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Happy, healthy New Year to you and all of your listeners.
Thank you so much, Anne-Louise. And, of course, you've been you know, very influential for me personally in my clinical practice and also for many of our listeners. Many of our listeners are long-term followers of yours, so I think they're anxiously awaiting, you know, whatever you're into these days. And, you know, so first of all, you know, tell us a little bit about Before the Change, Taking Charge of Your Perimenopause. Define perimenopause. You know, why should that be a problem or an issue for women?
Well, Before the Change is really about that perimenopausal stage of life, which occurs sometimes 10, sometimes 12 years before the cessation of your monthly cycle. But what I'm finding really disconcerting, Dr. Ron, is that it's occurring earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. And many women say, gee, I'm too young for this, when in effect, you know, their hormones are totally out of whack because of the environment in this day and age. Mm-hmm. So this is a book that may not just be for those in perimenopause, but for those of us in menopause and beyond. It's a book for all of us that are trying to protect ourselves from the assaults of the daily environment, because a lot of those old fixes simply are not working anymore.
Well, you know, it does seem to be a condition of civilization, and maybe not just because we're more self-indulgent, because we read about it, you know, on social media, that American women in their, starting in their 30s perhaps, but also in their 40s and then on into their 50s, may experience more distress than women have historically or in other parts of the world. You know, you might ask the average woman in Japan about, you know, hot flashes and, you know, terrible transition, and they shrug your shoulders and they go, what are you talking about? So to some extent, know. You know, it's a civilized thing. It's a cultural thing. You know, a woman in Bangladesh, you know, may go easily into menopause without these devastating changes. So what is it about our modern lifestyle that may, you know, you mentioned environmental toxins. Well, how could they possibly influence this?
Well, what we're looking at is the environmental toxins that are apparent in the xenoestrogens, or the false estrogens that surround us in the environment, with our pesticides, our plastics, our parabens, and some of our body care products. So there are many hormone-disrupting chemicals that are taking the place of our natural estrogen and are, in fact, 1,000 times more toxic. So what we're finding is that women, although they're having fluctuating estrogen levels in their systems, have a preponderance of estrogen to the extent where they're lacking progesterone. And during the particular perimenopausal stage, as well as PMS, most women are suffering from progesterone deficit symptoms.
So-called estrogen really dominance. No, it's not just too much estrogen, but it's a relative excess of estrogen vis-a-vis progesterone, which should be balancing it, right?
That's what the issue is, exactly. And the other thing that I learned, and this is what I talk about in Before the Change, which I felt really needed to be updated since 2004, was that we're now seeing a major correlation between the mineral copper and too much estrogen. Hmm. So for those that are on vegan diets, yeah, that's huge as far as I'm concerned. A preponderance of estrogen, preponderance of the copper, if you've been using a copper IUD, which seems to be back in popularity these days, we see a preponderance of copper if you've been an inveterate tea drinker, whether that's green tea, white tea, or black tea.
You're saying too much copper excess. Copper overload.
Copper excess, to me, goes hand in hand with estrogen dominance to some degree.
That's
an
interesting insight. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, what I wanted to say is that copper is to estrogen what zinc is to progesterone.
Oh.
So you got too much estrogen, not enough progesterone, and not enough zinc, which is very deficient in our typical American diet, particularly with women, because we don't eat a lot of zinc-rich foods like red meat or pumpkin seeds or even eggs to that extent. And so you're seeing too much copper, not enough zinc, and that is really reflecting itself in this estrogen dominance, very unique situation to 21st century females.
Interesting. So let's, while we're talking about copper in foods, what are rich sources of copper in our diet which may predispose women to an excess of copper? Where are we getting too much?
Oh, we're getting it in the tea that I mentioned. We're getting it in chocolate. You're getting it in cocoa powder. Mm-hmm. You're getting it in dried yeast. We're getting it in curry powder. We're getting it in foods like seeds and nuts, particularly their cashews as well as sunflower seeds. You're getting it in avocados.
What you're describing is like about 40% of my diet, but it's a good thing I take a zinc-rich multiple to counteract that. And I do, of course, I do have animal protein and plenty of eggs. So maybe I'm balancing out that copper. But that in a quote healthy diet, that you can really max out on copper sources. What about shellfish? Is shellfish not a source?
It's also a source. We have a certain amount of zinc, of course, when it comes to oysters relationship to that copper. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. And then there is the copper water pipes, copper pots and pans. Let's not forget those.
Yeah.
And copper was added to amalgams back in 1976, which expedites the metabolism or the release, I should say, of mercury in the system. So you've got quite a bit of environmental toxicity going on. Thank God you don't have a copper IUD.
Not the last time I checked, no.
That's good. Good news.
Yeah. Right. So, okay. So now you mentioned these phytoestrogens. You have some really interesting and distinct opinions about soy, which in fact is a phytoestrogen. And a lot of people urge, some integrative physicians and some experts urge women to consume a lot of soy to offset the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause. Are you on board with that?
Well, here's the thing that I've learned about soy. I think soy can be a female's best friend if it's fermented, a non-GMO source of soy. So fermented in the form of tempeh or some of these very fancy drinks that they have out there, or even a little bit of tofu and miso, then I think you're in safe waters. Mm-hmm. However, if it is GMO and if it's non-fermented, then I think we're in trouble because there are many kinds of inhibitors that you find in soy, and I find that a lot of women will then start stockpiling the copper, which they do not in a fermented soy product, believe it or not.
So things like texturized vegetable protein or soy burgers or, tofurkey, these sort of faux meat products maybe more the refined
processed,
soy,
yeah.
processed soy, right?
Yeah. So soy is a double-edged sword. If it's fermented, then I believe it's very helpful. And as a matter of fact, there are major cancer drinks that are out there that are made from fermented soy that have saved people's lives. So mm-hmm. I can't negate the effect and the effectiveness of it, but it needs to be a non-GMO source of soy, and it needs to be fermented.
Okay. What about the issue of the thyroid effects of soy? And just in general, is hypothyroidism part of the pattern of perimenopause? Is that something that contributes to the woes of women in that age group?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, people are fat, 40, fatigued, and usually have a problem with their thyroids. There's no question. And so I think that we have to understand that copper can sit on the thyroid and affect it. And we also have to realize that when it comes to the thyroid, you're also looking at a gallbladder connection, which I write about in Before the Change, my updated edition. Mm-hmm. So I'm believing that for many women, hypothyroidism is becoming a reality, and that's because we've got issues with too much gluten sometimes in the diet, which impacts thyroid hormone, not enough trace minerals like
right.
your iron as well as your selenium that help T4 and T3, or you've got real adrenal burnout, and so the thyroid is really doing double duty. Many different symptoms seem to come home to roost when you're in the change before the change.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, from my standpoint, I can't tell you how many women in that particular age group I've helped over the many years of my career by, in effect, breaking the rules of conventional endocrinology. I will give women with borderline thyroid function some natural thyroid. And no, you can't get it in a health food store. It's not like, you know, ground up porcine thyroid that you get in a health food store. It's prescription medication, Armour thyroid, natural desiccated thyroid, Euthyroid, you know, there's different formulations. But are there natural ways to make sure that you have a healthy thyroid short of taking medication?
Well, I think sometimes it's almost a necessity to take some sort of thyroid support. But what I'm finding, if you can support your body's ability to transfer that T4 into the more activated T3, then you're in very healthy ground. That's where enough protein comes into play. That's where the removal of the gluten, as I mentioned, that's where a good multi, as well as some adaptogens like ashwagandha, for example, which is noted to be very healthy. So all of those things, as well as the health of your gallbladder, there seems to be an unholy alliance, mm-hmm. which I was able to uncover through research in this book,
yep.
between gallbladder and liver function and your thyroid. And a lot of times when women have their gallbladders removed, they come down with hypothyroidism mm-hmm. several years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recently...
So what we're learning is a connection.
Yes, for sure. Well, you know, and what we do see is that the very same women, you know, we talked about, fat, 40, and we add one to that, which is fertile women who have had multiple children. And, you know, it's like we called it the four Fs in medical school. This is our mnemonic for gallbladder disease. And high estrogen women who are very fertile have gone through a lot of pregnancies. Maybe they're a little overweight. They've got insulin resistance. They hit 40. Often they are fair, but not necessarily, because Native Americans have a very high incidence of gallbladder disease, as do Hispanics, less so African Americans. There you have the perfect storm for, you know, the need for gallbladder removal. It's so common in women in that age group. It's almost a rite of passage these days, like getting your tonsils out.
I know, what we have to understand is that inadequate bile, which the liver produces and is stored in the gallbladder, can lead to poor estrogen metabolism, to hypothyroidism, to fatigue, constipation, and weight gain. So as I say, there's this unholy alliance, and every body part is connected.
Okay, listeners, as usual, let's pause for a moment to let one of our sponsors share this vital message with you. Here goes. As a health-conscious person, you're going to love our new sponsor, HealthIQ. HealthIQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, strength trainers, healthy eaters, and more. The HealthIQ Advantage is their unique mortality model on the health-conscious and lower rates for health-conscious people, like a good driver savings on auto insurance. They also have unique underwriting that's tailored to the needs of the health conscious, so things like having an adverse family history won't typically drive your rates up. You can actually qualify for up to 33% savings by doing things like taking a health IQ quiz and scoring elite, having a membership to a qualifying association or gym for more than 1 year, and more. Health IQ believes the best way to improve the health of the world is to celebrate the health conscious rather than penalizing those who are not. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/Hoffman or mention the promo code Hoffman when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Even if you don't qualify, Health IQ will use their world-class underwriting team and shop the nation's top 30 carriers to get you the lowest retail rate in the market. So don't miss your chance to save up to 33% in your life insurance, and check out healthiq.com/Hoffman to see if you qualify today. Thanks for listening. And thanks for supporting our sponsors, because they're what makes Intelligent Medicine a possibility for you as a free resource. And now back to our guest, Anne Louise Gittleman. So what you actually, in your detox protocols, I think you address this issue of a sluggish gallbladder. You know, how do you get your gallbladder to revive and start producing those critical digestive enzymes so that you properly process your foods, you overcome constipation, and rid your body of excess toxic estrogen?
Well, what we need to do is we need to tonify it, and we do that with bitter, because I think our mantra for 2018 should be bitter is better.
Right.
So the more bitter foods that you add to your diet, the healthier your gallbladder, your bile production, your estrogen metabolism is going to be. And that means more dandelion root. Dandelion is a bitter. Believe it or not, coffee in small amounts
yeah.
is also
well,
a bitter.
It's no coincidence that coffee enemas were so popular, you know, that is actually a means of discharging bile from the liver.
You bet.
And there are some studies that suggest there's less liver cancer if you drink coffee. There's less fatty liver. Many of these conditions are alleviated by, you know, just drink a good old coffee, whether it's even decaf, it doesn't matter.
And I find that so fascinating. I'm also a big believer in adding a certain supplement back into the diet, which is a combination of choline at 500 milligrams per meal, which defats the liver, marvelous supplement that most of us are so utterly deficient in, a little bit of lipase, maybe the amino acid taurine, and even taking some ox bile supplementation, perhaps in a bitter like gentian root or the ox bile itself. So there are many different ways to get your bile flowing, your liver detoxifying, and your thyroid on track again.
And actually, there is a product, a traditional product. One is Swedish Bitters, which is a formula.
Yay!
That's
often I love
used.
It.
Are you a fan of that?
Yes, I'm a big fan of it. Thank you very much.
And then there's that European product, which is, made it over here. The name eludes me right now, but it's sort of a bitter digestive. It's it'll come back to me in a second. But, certainly bitters may play a role in tonifying the body. You can help your digestion in a couple of ways. One is you can take digestive enzymes, outside digestive enzymes, but you can also amp up your own production of digestive enzymes by using these bitter herbs. They're actually designed to improve the flow of bile and to promote digestion. They're actually referred to in Europe as digestifs, right?
I love it, yes. Very, very important. I think if the most important thing as we march into the new year is that we learn that bitter is our friend. It is the only real taste that's deficient and negligent in the American diet. So getting more bitters, even in the form of, believe it or not, horseradish, sauerkraut, or some of the herbals that you talked about are exceedingly important for the tonifying of the liver, the kidneys, as well as the gallbladder.
Indeed. Any other new insights that you're bringing to fore in your updated edition of Before the Change?
Well, we've spoken a little bit about the copper connection to estrogen and estrogen dominance, the lack of zinc contributing to progesterone. We've talked a little bit about the importance of liver and bile support, particularly the connection between the thyroid and the bile production. I would also suggest that I talk a little bit about how more exercise is not better than less, and how I believe that sitting, of course,
i.e. less is more. You know, in effect, you're saying less is more. and when it comes to exercise.
Yes, and for it is, and for me, who used to believe if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing, this is a very big insight that I felt I needed to share. Yeah, very much so.
Can you elaborate on that?
Sitting is the new smoking.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Can you elaborate on that that theme? Because, you know, we have a lot of people who are, I mean, I call them gym rats. You know, they're constantly banging it out. And, you know, we see so many sports injuries, so many, especially young women who are sidelined with knee problems and ankle problems and even, you know, fractures, premature fractures, because they're running on fumes. And, you know, I just had one of those gals in my office recently. Who was just a fantastic athlete, but experienced a debilitating fracture. So what's up with that?
What's up with that is you're overdoing too much of a good thing. And I think that part of it is that we're using up our real, I'd call them precious antioxidants, number one, our liver, our kidneys, our stress systems, whether it's your thyroid or adrenals, can't keep up with all of this. And I also think it's important for people to understand that when you exercise more than 2 hours continuously, you know, you're on cortisol overload, and that is not good for your bones and bone thinning. Too much cortisol can impact the bones, impact your sex hormones, impact just about every system in the body. So I think more can be less for many of us, or less should be more, I should say. I think that the right exercise, of course, will lower insulin resistance. It'll reduce stress. It'll balance hormones and improve glucose tolerance, and you can do that for opting for maybe half an hour of vigorous exercise, or try to do shorter and even more intense high-intensity interval training, which seems to be at the forefront today.
Indeed. It's a more efficient way of getting in your exercise. You know, there have been so many changes in the nutrition field since we got started. And I remember distinctly comparing notes with you. It must have been 25 years ago or more. And we both, you have background in the Pritikin Center, where they used a vegan or quasi-vegan diet, certainly a very vegetarian diet, to reverse cardiovascular disease. That was Pritikin's obsession, is that low, low fat. And then it's almost like you had an epiphany, and we met, I remember distinctly the moment, and we both expressed doubts about that, because I came from a slightly different background, but it was essentially the same view. Macrobiotic diet was a panacea or a cure-all for all that ails mankind. And we both suddenly had a little bit of a crisis of confidence in that paradigm. Are you excited by the new trend towards embracing paleo or ketogenic diets? I mean, so many of the younger practitioners are getting on board with that.
Yeah, I think it's a trend in the right direction. It could be a little extreme for certain people. I think that also can be overdone. But by and large, I'm certainly more in favor of a higher fat diet, of a higher protein diet, and one that employs all of the detox mechanisms that I write about before the change. Yes, I'm definitely on board. And I think that the vegan diet, if done properly in certain times of life, in certain periods of life, probably is healthful and cleansing. I just don't think it's a diet for life for those of us under modern day stressors.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right. This is a good point at which to pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts. Our guest is a veteran nutritionist, Anne Louise Gittleman. She's a PhD and also is a certified nutrition specialist, author of The Fat Flush Plan, and many other books. And her latest is a great one, Before the Change, Taking Charge of Your Perimenopause. And when we return, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, specifically about how people can undertake a safe, reasonable, healthy detoxification program to begin the year, because this is the time of fulfilling resolutions and, you know, back to discipline and rectitude in 2018. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.